Kia ora. Welcome to Amaranth Podcast, episode 319. Today is Tuesday, March 22nd, 2016. I realized recently that so far this year I've released 2 podcast episodes per month, which is pretty dramatically better than I've done in the past couple of years. And I mention that first because this is my second episode for March. It's also my last episode for March, but I'll talk about that later. And but also because I believe in celebrating the little victories and little achievements. And granted, this is very little and unimportant, but nevertheless, it is a victory and deserves to be celebrated in its own right. I still need to get better about editing and posting 2 political episodes in a timely manner. I've got one from the end of January I haven't posted yet, and then one after that. But, you know, victories where we find them, eh? This episode is called From Overseas because the results of the Democrats Abroad global primary were released. And I actually think they're kind of interesting. So I thought I'd talk a little bit about that. The headline result is that Bernie Sanders won 69% of the vote and Hillary Clinton won 31% of the vote. And as a result of that, he gets 9 delegates and she gets 4. There are an additional 4 superdelegates that at this stage are uncommitted. It's made up of 8 members of the Democratic National Committee, each of whom gets half a vote. I don't know why, but that's the way they do it. And so, like I said, those are the headline results. There were 34.5 votes cast in 170 countries around the world, which, by the way, they say is up 50% on 2008, which is, you know, pretty awesome. And Bernie Sanders won in 168 countries. Hillary Clinton won only 2. She won in Nigeria, where she got 4 votes and Sanders got 1, and also in the Dominican Republic, where she got 350 votes to Sanders' 53. I have no idea why. I don't know anything about the American expat community in the Dominican Republic, let alone among Democrats, so I have no idea why that would be. If anybody does know, I would love to find out, because I have no explanation for why that is. But overall, Sanders did do very well. And among Democrats living in New Zealand, there were 539 votes that were cast. 476 were for Sanders and 63 were for Clinton. And these votes amounted to 1.56% of the votes cast in the global primary overall. And which is not a huge amount, I grant you, but it's not that different from a lot of other countries. It's more than some. It's more than Nigeria. So, you know, It's still something. And I was following it when it was happening, when they had some special events, especially around the start of the voting. The voting was held from March 1st through March 8th, because being a global primary, there are a lot of logistics to coordinate, and that's also why the results weren't released until just now, because it takes a while to collect and tabulate votes from all over the planet. And so it was a more involved process than just an ordinary state's primary would be. But what's interesting about this, another thing that's interesting about this, is that this is a way for Democrats living outside the U.S. to participate in the nomination process. There are 3 ways they can do it. If they're overseas for just a short period of time, they would probably cast an ordinary absentee ballot like anybody else would. If they're overseas indefinitely, like me, they'll probably take part in the Federal Postcard Application Program, or FPCA, and vote in their state's primary. But some states don't allow overseas voters to vote in primaries. Other people, for whatever reason, may not want to take part in that program. And those people can take part in the Democrats Abroad global primary. The Republicans have nothing like this. They have an overseas group called, I think it's called Overseas Republicans, if I remember correctly. But they don't operate any kind of global primary. I have no idea how they come up with the delegates that go to their convention. They do it somehow. But it's nothing comparable to Democrats Abroad's global primary. And I think that's a shame, because as a politics geek, I would love to be able to compare and contrast how overseas Republicans vote compared to their fellow partisans back in the USA, in the same way that we can do that with Democrats. We can see how various countries, how the split in various countries works out, and are some maybe more a bit lefty than others, you know, all that sort of thing. You can slice and dice the statistics any number of different ways, but you can't do that with Republicans because they don't do this sort of process, this sort of open selection process. And I don't know why Republicans don't do that. They just don't. And if they did, I would certainly talk about it, because on this blog, I don't talk about partisan stuff in any great detail, certainly not about U.S. politics. I do about New Zealand politics, because that's a little different. And if you do want to know my opinions about U.S. politics, you can always check out Too Political podcast at toopolitical.com when I get around to posting them. Be that as it may. Nevertheless, my whole point in bringing this up is just that I think it's interesting to see how American Democrats living overseas vote. And in my blog post, there is a link to the actual result on the Democrats Abroad site, so you don't have to go looking for it. And that has in-depth details by country and by region and stuff. And so it makes for interesting reading if you're into political statistics and things like that. So, you know, if not, then give it a miss. And that's also why I'm not talking about it for a great length of time either, because I know some people couldn't possibly care less about U.S. politics. How about New Zealand politics instead? Well, not politics exactly, but the New Zealand flag referendum, voting in the New Zealand flag referendum closes on Thursday in 2 days' time as I'm recording. And I have no idea what the final results are going to be. I still expect that the current flag will win the referendum for a variety of reasons. And I'll talk about that probably after the voting closes. And I've talked about it a little bit before, I know, but I've had more time to think about it. But what is interesting is that voting is up fairly dramatically on where it was at this stage of the first referendum. So far, 1.9 million voters have returned their ballots. And that's out of a total enrollment of 3.1 million total enrolled voters. There's 3.4 eligible, but 3.1 enrolled. And which is 92% enrollment rate, which isn't too bad. But be that as it may, I think it should be better. But anyway, so what that means is about 60% of enrolled voters have returned their ballots. And that's not bad. That's pretty good, especially for a postal ballot. And because historically, New Zealanders often ignore their postal ballots. They still generally do better than Americans do on any election, but I digress. What is significant about this is that it is considerably higher than the first referendum was at the same point. I mean, right now we're at 1.9 million, and back in the first referendum, it was about 1.2-ish million, thereabouts, maybe a little bit above that. And so it's already well ahead. It's actually already well ahead of the final result for the previous referendum, which had fewer than 1.4 million votes cast, and we're already up to 1.9 million. So I think that however the results of this referendum turn out, that we have to say that the results are legitimate. And it's not just a minority dictating to the majority how it's going to be, because there has been a fairly heavy turnout in the flag referendum, and it could very well end up, the actual turnout could end up even higher before all is said and done, because those results were as of, I think, 2 days ago. Let me just go back to my site and check. This is as of yesterday. So today's votes aren't in, and there's still a couple more where they could go before we'll find out. And the final result, we won't know until the end of the month when the final results are out. We'll know the preliminary results on Thursday night, but we won't know the final results for a few days after, because they have to double-check things, and there's always a few stragglers and things like that. And so it might adjust the total slightly. I don't think it will, but it could. Because their goal is to count all votes, all legal votes, and they do a pretty darn good job, in my opinion. In other New Zealand news, the government has announced the next Governor General of New Zealand. It's going to be Dame Patsy Reddy, R-E-D-D-Y. I have no idea who she is. I've never heard of her before. But apparently she's a bigwig in business and in philanthropy. She promotes the arts in particular. But, you know, whatever. She will be the third female governor general, and the first in a couple of years, a couple of terms, I should say, because the previous one was finished her term back in 2006. And the governors general are appointed usually to one term, which is 5 or 6 years, I'm not really sure. But the current ones expire or ends the end of August, and the new governor general's term, Dame Patsy's term, will begin on September 14th of this year, September 14, 2016. Now, the governor general is essentially the viceroyal. Officially, under our constitutional monarchy, the governor general is the Queen's representative in New Zealand. What that means is that when Parliament passes a law, it's the governor general who provides the royal assent on behalf of the Queen. And the governor general also officiates at the state opening of Parliament after every election, and is the one who officially issues the writ for new elections and all that kind of stuff, all sorts of ceremonial stuff. But by and large, has no real function. They get paid nearly $350,000 a year for ceremonial functions and roles and stuff. There are some who would argue that there's no need for the job at all, but you know, it sort of needs to exist for our current constitutional arrangement. Should New Zealand become a republic one day, it is entirely possible that the governor general could be replaced with a president who's appointed in the exact same way. So there's a 5 or 6 year term or whatever it is, appointed. They're nonpartisan, they're non-political, just as the governor general is now. There's actually no reason why that part needs to change. But, of course, it would no longer be royal assent. I don't think they would need to provide assent at all. But anyway, I digress. If it sounds like I'm a little mixed feelings about this, it's because I do have mixed feelings about it. I'm not entirely sure why we have to have a governor general. The governor general is a representative of a foreign head of state who happens to be New Zealand's head of state through an accident of history and constitutional arrangement and stuff. Whether or not it's a good idea to continue doing that or not, I don't know. I cannot say at this particular juncture. I should probably talk about that more in depth one day. I have said in the past that I'm a Republican with a lowercase r, thank you very much. And I do think that New Zealand should become a republic at some stage. Whether it should happen anytime soon or not is a whole other issue. There's certainly far more important things right now than a Republican debate, because if the flag debate was awful, and it was, the debate about becoming a republic would just be hideous. I think we need to wait for calmer times. But that is a topic for another day as well. I also wanted to talk a bit about what's coming up. But first of all, we are coming up on Easter weekend, which is a 4-day holiday weekend. And because of that, there's a disruption in my normal schedule anyway. Nigel is actually off from tomorrow, Wednesday, right through till he goes back to work on Tuesday of the following week, because, as you may recall, Good Friday and Easter Monday are both public holidays in New Zealand, so we have a 4-day holiday weekend. Now, his brother's shifting into a new house on Friday, I think it is, so we're going to go down and help. I'm making quote marks with my fingers, because we probably won't actually move very much, but anyway, or I won't, because I just don't. And so we'll go down there, but then we're also going to pick up Nigel's mom and bring her back to stay with us for, I guess, about a week, I don't know, and just, you know, have a nice casual time after that. So because of that, because Nigel is going to be here the rest of this week, and his mom will likely be here all of next week, as far as I know, I'm unlikely to record again in March, which is what I was talking about at the beginning of this episode. It's more likely that I'll record again in April. But we shall see, because I don't know. I don't know how things are going to play out. It'll be an adventure together. Meanwhile, last time I said that I had hoped to record on that Friday of that week. And the reason was because that Friday I was going to see the orthodontist for the initial consultation. Well, it ended up being nothing of any significance. And so there was no particular reason to do an episode about that. And then the following Tuesday I was going to record. But then all that week I was busy with one thing or another, and I just didn't get to it, didn't get it done. And on Friday of last week, I was going to record, but Nigel came home a little bit earlier than I was expecting. And as we all know, I don't record with somebody in the house. So I didn't do an episode last week at all, as it happens. But the orthodontist thing, as I said, there's really nothing much to report. He did his preliminary assessment, made some notes and things. And I'll go back in, I think it's May, where he will do a more thorough investigation and do molds and all that sort of stuff. And then he will come up with a plan that we'll discuss. I think it's a month after that or something. I can't remember. I've got the appointments, but I just don't remember when they are. I can't remember anything these days. If I didn't look on my various electronic devices, I wouldn't know what I was doing. However, that's actually not a huge digression, because that is about health-related stuff. Anyway, the gist of it is, you may remember that I have been troubled by this tooth that dropped because of my periodontal disease, my front tooth that's dropped lower. And what he's proposing, and there is a process called intrusion, where they basically push it back up into the gum a little bit, a millimeter or two maybe. And what he's proposing to do is to push that one up a little bit, but also bring the other one down a little bit, and hopefully bring them together a little bit, and then the dentist can put veneers on to make it prettier. And the dentist didn't want to do veneers because, as things stand now, because it would have made, they would have been massive, and it would have looked like I had boat oars in my mouth. And he didn't want to do that then, which I fully understand and support. But the orthodontist pointed out that if you bring things together a lot, then you have to do something with the lower teeth, because it's not just bringing them closer together, it also is bringing them inward. And so you have to move the lower teeth inward as well in order to get them out of the way. And so it's far more complicated and expensive than just simply trying to tidy things up a little bit, which is probably the route he's going to go. Although, I don't know, because, you know, he hasn't done his full investigation yet. But that's kind of the way it's looking. And I'm absolutely okay with all of this. When I started all this, my quest was to get a prettier smile. But at this point, I'm willing to accept basically what I can get. And I'm not expecting miracles. I'm just expecting improvement and getting my teeth evened out a little bit, maybe with veneers to make my smile prettier. That would be lovely. Then I'll also do the dental whitening and stuff to get rid of the tetracycline stains and all that sort of stuff. So in the end of it, what I'll end up with will be something better. It won't necessarily be what I originally imagined or hoped for or whatever, but it will be better. And there comes a point sometimes in life where better is good enough. And that's one of those times. In other health-related news, I went back to the doctor the other day because my prescription for blood pressure medicine was running out the first month, and my doctor's away, so I saw the locum, who's from Cuba, by the way, which is timely with President Obama being there at the moment. And so he was telling me a bit about his family and their history and stuff like that, which is fascinating because you read about this kind of stuff, but I've never actually talked to anybody from Cuba, let alone somebody who's still got family there and is also connected to the exile community and stuff. So it was actually really quite interesting to talk to him about that. I was with him longer than I should have been, probably, because an appointment is usually only 15 minutes, and this was more like half an hour or so. But anyway, among other things, when I first got there, I always stress about going to the doctor. I think a lot of people do. And part of it for me is about traffic and about will I find parking and all that kind of thing. So I got there, and I had only been there a couple of minutes, and they took me in to take my blood pressure right away, and it was high, and about the same as it had been a month earlier, which would theoretically mean that the medicine isn't working, the prescription isn't working. But meanwhile, I went right from there over to get my flu shot, because we are in autumn now, and it's time for the influenza vaccination, so I got mine. And then I saw the doctor, so it was one thing right after another. And the doctor waited a little while. We chatted for a while, because I'd never met him either. And there's always anxiety around that. And he took my blood pressure again, and it was much better. It was still a bit high, but it was closer to normal than, way closer than it was when I arrived there. So all of that's very, very hopeful and all that. And I've since bought a blood pressure monitor. We had one, but the hose on it broke. And so we haven't had one for quite a while, and I bought a new one just so I can track it myself to see how I'm doing. But the gist of it is that he wrote a prescription for three months, but it's with two repeats, so that if between now and the end of those 3 months they decide to change the medication or up the dose or whatever, there's flexibility there. Because once you get it, because you can get 3 months worth of pills all at once, and if you do and anything changes, they have to be thrown away. They can't be reused for somebody else. So it's a practical thing, really. And on the whole, things have gone okay. I've experienced some of the typical symptoms of somebody who's first going on this medication. The Cuban doctor explained that they call these naive patients, I think, people like me. I think it's naive patients or something like that. But I do remember the word naive because I thought it was funny, and, especially with me clicking on the internet all the time. Anyway, what it refers to are people who haven't taken a medication before, and their adjustment period is different than somebody who has been taking a class of medication and switching to a different drug. And in the case of somebody like me, it can take anywhere from 3 to 6 months for things to even out. And basically, they need to give it a bit of time and not worry too much about the side effects as long as they don't get worse. And the initial side effects were very mild. Got a bit of a headache, and one day I was a bit nauseous and a bit dizzy, all of which is very typical for people first going on this medication. That went away. But since then, ironically enough, I've had some angina, and it's caused primarily by the pills. And I have been getting used to that, and I've also found ways of dealing with it. Drinking like a Diet Coke or something actually helped a lot, probably because of the burping, but I actually think it's the cold or the cool was what helped relieve it. Because since then, I haven't had it as much since for about a week or so, and I tried just some cool water the last time I had a bit of it, and it went away. So I think it's the temperature, and not the bubbles. So I'm adjusting to it slowly and getting used to it, and it's a process, not a destination. But I while I was at the doctor, I also got my readouts from 2011, which was the last time I had blood tests done, and I was right that my results for things like cholesterol and triglycerides and all that sort of stuff are dramatically better now than they were 5 years ago, or nearly 5 years ago. And I don't have a full explanation for why that would be, because I'm not in, my lifestyle isn't any healthier, or my diet isn't any healthier than it was then, except that I'm now taking, as I said, I'm now taking fish oil and capsules, 3,000 milligrams a day. And I think that has got to be that's the most likely explanation for why things have improved so dramatically in that period of time. And I'm also, my blood sugar was good, and my triglycerides were good. So all of that indicates I'm not pre-diabetic in any way. So, you know, it's all good. It's just that there are a few little details that I need to work on and need to help sort out. And I am. So that is the update on the health front. Things are going fine. I don't know if the medication will be right for me ultimately, if they'll have to increase the dosage or whatever, but my goal is to make all of this stuff temporary and to get back to a more normal and healthier state of being, I guess, which requires me to lose weight and to exercise, neither of which I've been very good at over the past few years, so this is going to be a challenge. Nevertheless, I have been eating healthier over the past week or so on the whole. And, you know, like I said, it's a process, it's a journey, not a destination. Well, ultimately there is a destination being healthier, but right now it's a journey. And, there will be ups and downs. There will be, steps forward and steps backward along the way. I'm realistic about it. it took me a few decades to get to this point, so it's not going to go away overnight. But my goal is to do whatever I can to get myself back to as normal and healthy a me as I can. And how successful I will be will depend on a lot of factors, that some of which are beyond my control, like genetics, for instance. But we'll see. And those will also be stories that I will tell in the months ahead, no doubt. But that is it for today. That's it for this week, I'm sure, and probably it for this month. We'll see. You just never know. But I will talk to you soon. Bye. You can comment on this or any episode of the Amrens Podcast at amrenspodcast.com, where you can also leave a voice message. You can send me an audio message through Audioboo or Skype, where my username is Amarins, and you can email me, with or without a voice message, at Arthur, that's A-R-T-H-U-R, at amarinspodcast.com. This podcast is produced and distributed under Creative Commons license. Complete details at the website.